Pocket. 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 We deserve this win, man.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to your home on the ranges for changes.
Changes.
It's the purple and black pill. Hello, friends. My name is Ty Foster. I have been hosting this show for now going on 4 years. Can you believe that? Joining me, my best friend, a man who can claim the same. It's Duncan Smith. Hello, Duncan.
Hello, Ty.
I warned Duncan right before we started recording. That was the worst rhyme I've done yet, I think.
And yet I still wasn't prepared for it.
Yep, well, you know. It takes a master to warn you and still get one over. I should explain what I mean when I say changes, of course, referencing my Jesus himself, David Bowie. Your boy, Ty Foster. It's been a chaotic off-season for us. I'm so glad that we left it the way that we did with an episode called The Cool Uncle with the Drug Problem, because we warned you guys that we were going to disappear, and that's exactly what we did. We actually recorded one more episode in July, and then I just forgot. I just didn't edit it. I just forgot to do it. So we recapped the off-season already, but both of us have probably likely forgotten that. So we're going to burn through Kings off-season, NBA off-season, all of the interesting little tidbits going on in this lovely little league of ours. But first, I want to tell you guys the big news from my life, which will probably affect this show quite a bit. Your boy is moving to Sacramento.
What?
At the end of this month.
Sacramento, California.
Sacramento, California. Have you heard of it? That's going to be a place where I live very soon. And it's really wild for me to say, you know, I hope nobody in SAC takes this the wrong way, but I never really thought I was going to come back to Sacramento and be really super excited when I did. And life comes at you fast, because I am freaking stoked for several reasons, not least of which is I'm going to the goddamn opening night at Golden One Center. You know, I'm going to be there hopefully a lot this offseason. Playing music around town. I'm gonna just be a freaking Sacramento socialite. I cannot wait. So you know, hit us up, stay in touch. I will be a lot more accessible to most of you guys these days, so very, very, very psyched about that. Obviously, I'll keep you guys posted online and, you know, on the show, but that's coming. That's a big deal.
What, like, on a scale of 1 to 100, how likely do you think it is that you would have moved to Sacramento if the Kings won like 25 games last season?
It's hard to say. I mean, it's definitely a factor. There were a lot of other factors. For example, a slumlord bought our building and evicted us. So that was the main factor. Also, COVID has made rents in LA go up like 50% in the last 2 years or something. And also, we were going to move to Sacramento eventually anyway. You know, it makes sense for our family for all kinds of reasons. And we're just like, I think that it's just going to suit us really well. But to answer your question, I mean, like five, probably, you know, like I wouldn't be nearly as eager. Like the idea of living pretty near the arena and just kind of like bopping around whenever I want and like seeing Kings fans all the time, instead of feeling this sort of surreal sense of like being on another planet every time I see, you know, a street filled with purple and black clad denizens, you know, it's just gonna be so great. I can't wait for like the low-key cafe culture vibe. I cannot wait to have some delicious coffee with my three absurd tiny dogs. I can't wait to wear overcoats and shit. It's gonna be great.
Hell yeah.
And Duncan is a NorCal guy too. He lives in San Francisco, so boo to that aspect, but yay to the being nearby. So, you know, we're gonna be around. I'm a townie now.
Yeah, I'll take the train.
There you go. Public transit. So anyway, that's that on that. Hit me up. I'm around. Want to jump into the offseason recap real quick. The Kings had just a fascinating offseason for my money. A lot of people disagree because for the most part, they pretty much stood pat. Brought back a lot of our main guys, lost some of our rotation pieces, filled out the bench with some very interesting new guys. I'm just going to run down the moves from the offseason. We can just kind of chime in with anything that any impressions that we wanted to kind of get across about this stuff. Starting Of course, we discussed this a little in the last episode, but the draft magic of trading Holmes and the number 24 overall pick, Olivier Maxence Prosper, who everybody's just calling Omax, to Dallas for nothing. I'm pretty sure. Pretty sure it was literally nothing. And that, of course, cleared up space for us to do any number of other things, but mostly signed Domantas Sabonis for 5 years, $217 million. Any thoughts on that combo, that 1-2 combo?
Yeah, it's a lot of money for... I'm not super concerned with the Omax giveaway. I sort of understand the idea that, like, we have a pretty deep rotation as it is, and a late first-round pick, you don't necessarily expect a person picked in that position to make an immediate impact. Obviously, sometimes it happens. There's a risk to giving away a rookie, but there's also a pretty big upside in keeping Sabonis, making everybody feel comfortable and like it's a family, and understanding what the long-term vision is. So I understood that one on draft day, and I think the big risk is when you give somebody that much money up front, you know, they could get hurt in year one of their contract, and then all of a sudden it's this huge albatross. Like, that can happen, but also you can't really have continuity and you can't have elite players if you're not willing to just accept that risk on the front end and hope for the best in terms of health. And as a player, you know, obviously Sabonis is incredibly talented in some ways. There are other things that aren't his strong suit, you know, like he's not an absolute brick wall defensively inside, but I think that he will easily earn his money as sort of the thing that holds the team together as an offensive hub, which we saw last season. I don't really think there's any reason to imagine that that's just going to disappear on him. So I like the signing.
Yeah. Mileage may vary, I guess. The reactions to it were a little bit mixed across the league, but for the most part, I think people kind of get what Monty is cooking here. Speaking of continuity, there was a three-pack of veterans brought back very early in the free agent cycle, especially Trey Lyles. It was announced like immediately at the bell. So a little bit of tampering going on there. You love to see it. Trey Lyles coming back for 2 years, $16 million. Eminently reasonable. I thought he was going to get maybe a third year at maybe slightly more money. I was just thrilled. He was, as you guys might remember, he was like my number one priority to bring back this offseason. That happened. What do you think about that, Dunk?
Yeah, I mean, quality role player, obviously accepts the fact that he's not going to be a full-time starter or anything, but if you need him in a pinch, he also is not somebody who seems to choke under the pressure or be uncomfortable in a larger role. So I think he's kind of the like platonic ideal of a role player. And, you know, $8 million per season is relatively normal or even low for somebody who's getting real rotation minutes at this point, the salary cap being what it is. That's like 5% of the whole salary cap or something. And only being 2 years is, like you said, that's the biggest thing. Is with rotation players, I think you want to give yourself those outs, not because we think that Lyles is going to be a bad player in a year and a half, but because he's in a supporting role. So you want to be able to swap that out if you identify something that is a higher need. So that's going to be a very tradable contract, regardless of whether he's, you know, shoots 38% from three next season, or if he has a down year and shoots 34% or whatever. Like, he's still going to be pretty easy to move or package or keep, and then, you know, let continue in his role. It just gives you a lot of options when you sign a contract that's short term and low price like that.
Yeah, very important point you just made. Every single contract that the Kings signed this offseason, maybe, you know, excepting Sabonis and his giant $200 million plus deal, eminently tradable. So, you know, people have been kind of complaining that we don't have really the juice to make a big superstar splashy, you know, championship style move. These kinds of deals may ultimately put us in a position to do that. Not that I want to be thinking about that. Obviously, I love Lyles. Lyles can hit the three. Lyles gives you a tremendous amount of toughness. He's got that dog in him, as the kids like to say. And, you know, he knows his role. He knows exactly what he's doing. And beyond that, he is bringing a really, really kind of special vibe and like a very like grateful energy to this team. The Athletic just ran a story about him yesterday, I think. He's just kind of documenting how kind of tough it's been for him bouncing around the league. This is his ninth year, and this is, what, his fourth or fifth team. And he, you know, he was just in some kind of like unstable, unhappy situations around the league before this. And it was just a nice little piece about him finding his way to feeling like he's at home finally. My only thing with that deal is I'm now terrified of these 2-year deals like the one Malik Monk signed, because I'm like, oh no, does that mean we're like not going to have their bird rights when the deal's up? If they remain good players, that may make it hard to re-sign them. I don't really know whether that's a thing, but that occurs to me now, unfortunately. The other two that we brought back, of course, Alex Len, 1 year, $3.5 million. Very reasonable, big body. As much as anything else, it seems like Len is, just kind of a veteran to have around the locker room, and 6 fouls to throw at Jokic, pretty much, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And they're, I mean, Jokic is obviously one of them, but there are a good amount of centers in the NBA who are that just kind of jumbo size. As much as people like to talk about small ball or like mobile bigs, like Robert Williams being the thing you want in the future, you need to have at least one guy on your roster that is Alex Len's size, so that they can't just put somebody like Nurkic in the game and absolutely ruin you because your center is Trey Lyles. So I think it's an insurance policy, and again, a role. Like, he's got a very clear role, which is be a brick wall against big centers.
The other guy we're bringing back, a controversial move, at least at the moment that it was signed. I think a lot of that died down very quickly, but Harrison Barnes coming back, 3 years, $54 million. That's what, like a $17 million annual average value, something like that. There was, I would say, about half of Kings fandom that I was seeing on Twitter at the time. Like, people were melting down, like we had completely abandoned any ability to sort of throw our hat into, like, the superstar ring. This is obviously, most of this has died down, because the question at the time was, that I was asking, was, like, who are we supposed to be keeping our powder dry for? $17 million is, like, the low end of the going rate for a player who can do what Harrison Barnes can do. Am I crazy?
Yeah, no, you're not crazy. It's totally a reasonable amount for him. If anything, I think it's probably low and is going to look like a brilliant deal in about a year and a half as he plays some of the value of that contract away and some of the risk of injury. So in a vacuum, I think it's a totally good deal. And especially for the Kings, who, as you said, like, they're not going out and signing a marquee free agent. If they did, it would be something much worse, like, you know, giving over $100 million to Kyle Kuzma, who's a fine player, but he's not twice as good as Harrison Barnes. And more importantly than not being twice as good, Kyle Kuzma doesn't single-handedly make us a championship team, or like the difference between Kyle Kuzma and Harrison Barnes. So if you're going to like really put yourself in a position where you're financially locked for a long time, you should do it as your final move, as your championship move, like the way that the Bucks did when they gave away so much of their assets and cap space to get Drew Holiday, and now I guess the same thing again with Damian Lillard. So yeah, I didn't have any problem with them using a smaller amount of cap space on a reasonable deal for a guy who obviously wants to stay in Sacramento and has a clear role on the team. And also, the real way that superstars, the kind of superstars that could make the Kings a championship contender, move in 2023 or 2024 is via trade for a ton of draft compensation and salary filler. And so if and when time comes, having salary filler like Harrison Barnes, who, you know, not only eats up a chunk of a contract like Lillard's contract or Harden's or whoever else is on the move when you're looking to do it. And they're also like a professional rotation player who then can be turned around and traded again for more pieces if the team is in a full rebuild, or the team can say, okay, we're going to use this piece to have in the rotation because we're still a good team. Like, that's much more useful for getting a superstar than just empty salary cap space.
Yep. Monty has put himself in a very enviable position, I think, because not only does he have this really fun, young, kind of hip, beam-worthy, you know, group that he's put together, but he's also got an extreme amount of flexibility for a GM in the NBA right now. A lot of guys are kind of a little boxed in, especially with the second apron coming. He's got enough good players on, you know, like low money, early career deals that he can, you know, potentially put some of these pieces together now that things are kind of spread out a little bit more than they have been. Moving on, the other piece that came in free agency that was as much discussed and is looking like it's going to be a very consequential piece of our rotation, essentially replacing Terrence Davis in the rotation, which to me redounds to a pretty enormous upgrade. Sasha Vyzhenkov, the reigning MVP of EuroLeague, 3 years, 20 mil, less than I thought he was going to go for, but who knows what the market is for these guys that have never played in the NBA before. He'll be a 28-year-old rookie. They announced it Media Day. De'Aaron Fox officially said this guy does not have rookie deals. This man has been playing professional basketball for 12 years. Like, Keegan Murray's not going to be filling his car with popcorn, you know, which I think is very responsible. You know, it's classic De'Aaron. De'Aaron's not going in for any of the bullshit, you know?
Yeah. Good leadership. Love that.
Yep. Very smart. Very no-nonsense. I love De'Aaron. Everything about De'Aaron since he has sort of emerged as like the alpha dog on this team is just so great. I don't know if you saw it all. Deuce and Moe, shout out to Deuce and Moe, friends of the show, had an incredible like 2-hour Joe Rogan experience style conversation with he and Rosé, where the two of them just came in and like shot the shit in this tiny little studio with Deuce and Moe and talked about all kinds of stuff. Highly recommend everybody who listens to the show, if you somehow haven't heard it, go check that out. Because those guys are like, by which I mean De'Aaron and Rosé, just like completely normal people, just super accessible, sound like, you know, anyone that you might want to hang out with who is their age. You know, none of this like kind of pretentious celebrity stuff. Really perfect Sacramento superstars. And they named their friggin' kid Rain. You know, like they are plugged into this community and this city. And they are, you know, they're really like clearly relishing this kind of ability to kind of be like community fulcrum point, you know? And I just think that's so cool, so admirable.
Yeah, De'Aaron is in dad mode, like in every way, it seems like. He's just very, very locked in on being normal, stable, and like getting the job done.
Yeah. And for a point guard in particular, what more could you ask for? Especially because he's doing all that, but he's not doing some kind of Chris Paul virtue signaling corporate like fucking dad thing. He's doing actual dad, like grill dad energy. We love that.
He doesn't have any State Farm ads yet.
De'Aaron is so cynical, and he comes off so cynical that it's going to be hard for him, I think, in some ways to be a pitch man, because he's not going to come across as authentic when he does it, because he's going to be rolling his eyes the whole time.
Yeah.
Which to me makes him like a god among us. It makes him even 10 times cooler than I thought he was before. You know, what he would do, I think, a good ad for is like Pizza Guys, you know. Some Golden One, you know, something local.
You know what he should do? I'm gonna put this out there. De'Aaron Fox, incredible jawline, incredible bone structure,
very nice cheekbones, man,
just absolutely fire. He should be like a Gillette guy. Ooh. You know, like he doesn't need to talk in the ad. Just drag a razor across his face in like a beautiful way, and then he kind of slaps his face at the end. That's fine.
The best a man can get.
Yeah.
We're going like, I think they had like Jeter, Roger Federer.
He obviously does shave, so like it's not a, he doesn't have to be cynical about it.
That's true.
The product that he uses.
That's true. You know, even though razors are, of course, one of the classic business ripoffs, you know, what isn't?
Yeah, business ripoff. That's redundant.
There's no ethical consumption under capitalism. Of course, we all know this. De'Aaron Fox especially knows this. I mean, I can't wait until I get to Sacramento. And I, you know, I have this fantasy where I end up, you know, drinking a coffee or a cocktail, and De'Aaron Fox comes up and we have a long conversation, and we're just, you know, we're just talking Marxism. We're talking we're talking Engels. You know what I mean? I say that like I know shit. I'm listening to a podcast about the Russian Revolution for the first time right now. If anybody thinks I'm smart, You're wrong. I'm ignorant. I just like listening to podcasts.
Yeah, they don't think
books.
That though. That's okay. They don't.
Yeah. Good.
You have a podcast about the Kings. You spend a lot of time talking about the Sacramento Kings. Like,
yeah. Yeah, I just wanted to make sure that was nobody has the wrong impression about me. Okay, we are getting down into the nitty gritty of this offseason for the Kings. The only trade, I think, the only like major trade that was made or rotation-ish trade, Kings acquired Chris Duarte from the Indiana Pacers. Kevin Pritchard and Monty McNair love trading with each other. Kings gave up two second rounders, including one that used to belong to the Mavericks. Duarte had a very down year last year. He seemed to kind of end up in Rick Carlisle's doghouse, which is not a thing you want to do. Rick Carlisle's doghouse is like the doghousiest of doghouses. But he had he just had kind of a tough time out there. He seemed like he was not really that great of a fit with that team. And he had a great rapport with Domantas Sabonis when Sabonis was with Indiana a couple years ago. We're hoping that comes back. You know, this is a pretty low risk move. It's a flyer on the guy who's most likely going to be like our third string, 2-3. Can put some points on the board. He's a little older for a third year guy. Is you know, seems like a reasonable professional and a nice guy, which is a good start at least.
Yeah. I also low risk, I guess, kind of a high reward in the sense that he is just more depth that can do a little bit of shooting, a little bit of ball handling, hopefully a little bit of, like you said, moving around screens, keeping the defense on its heels. And he's got a bigger, big-ish body for a guard. So can't hurt to add a little depth there. Hopefully he can return to form and be something closer to the person that the player that he was in his rookie season. It seems like it's basically been just injuries preventing him from getting a stride back since then. So we'll see.
I also, this acquisition in particular really sort of put top of mind for me something I've been thinking about for a while, which, you know, I complain a lot about how sports in general, it in like kind of the media analysis, but also kind of in like the way that GMs approach their job all across sports now. There's a little bit of a de-emphasis on the, like the human element, right, in favor of this kind of, you know, quant, Wall Street sort of like financialization math moneyball thing, which is cool. Like, you know, there's aspects of that are great, that are like revolutionary and moving things forward, but it's kind of like a business mindset, right? And there's an aspect to which I think a lot of this stuff sometimes throws out the baby with the bathwater on the human element, and how there's stuff to mine there for advantage as well. And to me, it seems clear that Monty McNair views the interpersonal as an opportunity to, you know, exploit the weaknesses of other teams on this subject. Like the beam team thing last year was clearly a point of emphasis, not only with the players, you know, in creating that culture, but with the organization. They're like creating these like nightclub dance parties in the fucking locker room every night, and like taking photos and like, you know, clearly trying to create as like light and fun and positive of an energy as they could. And bringing in Duarte, I think, is it taking a stab at that. As much as it's kind of taking a stab at the basketball element, it's taking a stab at a guy who like really had a great relationship with Sabonis. And I look at that, and in addition to kind of the success he's having on the analytic level and the success that he's having, you know, kind of in the more now traditional way, or whatever you want to say, the more kind of typical way of doing things now, I think that this guy's doing exactly what I always wanted, and sort of like placing vibes as a kind of a higher priority than most of his competition out there.
Yeah. I mean, obviously they took a little bit of a swing, even though it was still a very reasonable contract, by going after Malik Monk, who famously is so close with De'Aaron. And hopefully this connection between Sabonis and Duarte is as strong as some people from Indiana have mentioned that it might be. You know, Mike Brown came in with a lot of guys from the Nigerian national team who he had relationships with. I know he has a lot of relationships just generally because he's been around the league so much, but that clearly was not an accident. So yeah, I would agree. It does seem pretty obvious that Monty is going out of his way to find pieces that are going to fit on a personal level in addition to like a X's and O's level or a financial strategy level. And I think, you know, the guys that we've talked about getting paid and being comfortable are part of that. Like, clearly, mm-hmm. Harrison Barnes is just sort of a model citizen as a locker room guy. So he's a good fit with everybody, even though he's maybe not the only person in the world who could get you, you know, 38% from 3-point and put up the numbers that he does. You know, like, there are Harrison Barnes replacements out there, but would every single one of them be really happy in their role and accept the city and accept the relationships with other players? I think it just is all evidence of exactly what you're talking about, the effort to create a culture.
Yeah, it's just not reasonable to me to assume that these things don't matter, you know? And I think that Monty is creating a little bit of kind of a test case or something like that, you know, to prove my theory.
Yeah, like, they certainly matter at our own jobs, right? Like,
exactly.
If you just think of these people as human beings instead of trading cards, like, yeah, of course it matters that the people who are more senior in their roles have respect for and receive respect from the people that are less senior in their roles. Like, that's an important part of any work environment.
Yeah, Domantas Sabonis versus Buddy Hield as your kind of veteran leader. Like, who are you going to pick? last but not least in this Kings offseason, Nerlens Noel, we knew ye well. JaVale McGee, kind of manna from heaven, appeared out of nowhere from Dallas, who signed him only 13 months ago to a $17.2 million 3-year deal, pulled some classic Dallas stuff and just cut him. So the Kings grabbed him. The terms of the deal, as far as I know, were never disclosed, but it most likely, you know, it's probably for the veteran minimum because he's getting paid by Dallas this year anyway.
I think I saw 5 somewhere.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think I saw that on Basketball Reference payroll page or something. I'm pretty sure that it was like 5 and change, which maybe that is what the minimum is for. No, it's probably the like biannual exception or something, some weird exception.
JaVale McGee keeps getting paid. We love that. His mom, Pamela McGee, played for the Monarchs in their inaugural season. Very cool, obviously, to bring that full circle. McGee at Media Day, which was just on Monday of this week, was looking like he is more than ready to be kind of one of the main mouthpieces of the team this year. He, you know, has been around the league a long time. He's won 3 titles as a role player, but a significant role player pretty much every time. You know, he knows about surviving in this league. He was kind of a somewhat hyped, sort of known for being boneheaded young player when he was with Denver. And he's grown into this, you know, completely different. The perception of him is completely different now. And a guy like that, I think, has a whole lot to offer a young group like this because they're young, but they're not like Rockets young. They're like young guys made of like, you know, Davion Mitchell type sort of straight A star student types, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, the window is now for this group. Obviously, we don't expect them to win a championship this season, but like, this is the time to be successful. We're not preparing for 5 years down the line, so I agree, great pickup. You know, if he doesn't end up holding up physically, if he is a little bit worse for the wear after Lord knows how many, probably 15 seasons in the NBA, then that's okay because it's a cheap deal and he's somebody who can be a good mentor, like you said. So I don't mind it at all. And I like the idea of an example to other players of how to be successful in the NBA without being somebody who's ever going to score 20 points per game.
Right. And worst case scenario, he's Vince Carter, you know, he's an extra coach or whatever. And that's useful. And we have Alex Len anyway, you know, so he's one of them is superfluous at a time. And, you know, we'll be needing both of them when Sabonis is down or needs a rest or whatever. So just again, more options. The Kings were clearly very motivated to get him. They went out and got him as soon as they could. I think it was a little competitive. I read some rumor that he picked the Kings over another Pacific Division rival. which is the kind of thing the Kings fans would get excited about because, you know, we have that big of a chip on our shoulder. But, you know, let's just leave it at it's nice that the Kings got JaVale McGee. That is it for the Kings offseason. So, you know, we have now we're looking at a depth chart of at the one, Fox, then Davion, then Keon Ellis, most likely. Colby Jones, Jordan Ford. These are some guys that were brought into training camp. Jeremy Lamb, by the way, on a training camp deal. That guy is hanging around the league. It's so great to see. Seems like a really cool guy. This will be his second stint with the Kings if he makes it onto the big team. I don't know if that's necessarily that likely. This team is looking pretty loaded. At the two, you got Kevin Huerter, Malik Monk, Duarte. Three, you got Barnes, Vezenkov, Duarte Kessler, maybe Jeremy Lamb. Four, you got Keegan, my boy, my number one, my sweet, sweet, sweet neurodivergent lad. Trey Lyles, Sasha Vezenkov, and then, of course, at the five, you got Domas, McGee, and Len. Looking pretty tasty to me. There's a lot of competition in the West, but I love where we're at this point, not just in terms of vibes, but in terms of the number of regular season wins I think we could potentially rack up.
Yeah, it should be a good regular season team. The depth is there, and the buy-in is obviously there, and so, and with a little continuity for the first time. I think that there's no reason to imagine that this team is going to backslide in some major way, barring, of course, you know, terrible injuries can happen, and there was luck with injuries last season, but yeah, can't really predict that, so. Without it, I think this is still a, you know, a top half of the conference team.
Yeah, and being particularly lucky, you know, last year with injuries does not mean we're going to be particularly unlucky this year with injuries. This is the thing about regressing to the mean. It's not like it happens all at once, you know? Like, it's just over the years, things will kind of obviously come out in the wash. But, you know, who knows? Knock on wood, obviously. Every sports fan lives in fear of bad injuries, but assuming, as we do at the start of the season, that that won't go down, we're looking at a solid team at the worst. I want to just quickly run through the rest of the NBA's in this somewhat whirlwind of a summer. You just mentioned Damian Lillard. This deal just went down last week after an endless, just fucking parade of nonsense from his agents and Shams and Chris Haynes and all the fucking mouthpieces from this guy just is transcribing the Blazers and this guy's transcribing the players and the agents. It was so dumb. It was so boring. Miami fans came off so bad, dude. Like, it got to the point online this offseason where I was like, I might hate these people as much as Lakers fans. Like, it's close. I don't. It's not that bad. But they're more annoying at this point. For sure. Definitely more annoying than Warriors fans. The shit that they were saying about about Tyler Hero's value this offseason was outrageous. They were like, once the deal went down and the, you know, the Bucks ended up sending Bucks ended up sending Drew Holiday, and they also shipped out Grayson Allen, and I think Keon Johnson was on their team. But and the Blazers ended up with Holiday, DeAndre Ayton, and 2029 unprotected pick at 2028 and a 2030 swaps, and like, you know, Miami fans were trying to be like, Tyler Hero is going to be able to get you a better package. If you want to just flip the main asset you're going to be getting, Tyler Hero will get you a better package than Drew Holiday. And like, how do you argue with that? Like, you're talking to a fucking Neanderthal, you know?
Yeah, I mean, even if you believe that to be true, that's kind of exactly why this deal took so many months, is theoretically Miami could have figured out what that package was and offered it to Portland, you know, like what the thing was that Portland would want that wasn't Tyler Hero, and that never came to pass. So, like, obviously, just the proof is in the pudding. Tyler Hero is not as easy to turn into useful stuff as Drew Holiday, which makes a lot of sense because Holiday is at the end of his contract. He's a veteran. He's won a championship, he, you know, that, like, it's pretty clear what he can do for a team that's already a winning team. Whereas there are reasons to like Hero. Like, he's sure. a good player, he's young, but he just is at the beginning of a very large contract. So any team that is already a contending team is going to have a hard time incorporating him, giving up the things that they would need to give up, and just taking on, like, over $100 million worth of salary.
And Miami just made the finals by replacing him with Gabe Vincent and Max Strus. Like, again, nothing against him. The thing that sucks about this, from Tyler Hero's perspective, this whole thing, is it's, like, hyping him up to this ridiculous degree while also making him seem like a loser for Portland not wanting him. And it's like, that's not his fault. None of this has anything to do with him, necessarily, except that he's become this sort of chit for Pat Riley to, like, dangle in public. And the whole thing, dude, like, it drives me crazy that, you know, the so-called player empowerment era has been mostly driven by kind of the business innovations of LeBron James and his cadre. And, like, we don't have to talk about that right now. There's you know, there's upsides and downsides to that. Overall, I'd say it's a very impressive American success story on a business level. But, you know, I have my kind of feelings about the downsides of it. But all that aside, not everyone is Rich Paul. And I think, I forget what this guy's, what Lillard's agent's name is, but this guy was trying to pull some, like, Game of Thrones shit, and it just didn't work. And it was really, really, really cringy to watch. And I thought, as I was watching it happen, I was like, this is probably kind of a watershed thing. Like, the NBA is going to have to address this in some way. Because for those of you who were under a rock for the last few months, Damian Lillard, through his agent, was very publicly, like, through the media, requesting a trade only to Miami. And he was doing this for, like, months, and pretty much everyone reasonable was like, well, that's not going to happen. Miami doesn't have a package that's good enough for a player of Damian Lillard's caliber. But it just kept kind of, this thing just, this, like, the corpse of this story just kept getting dragged through our feeds every day. And I didn't really know, like, what to make of it. This agent was, like, acting like a terrorist. It was hilarious. He was like, Damian Lillard will not sign with anyone. He will not show up to any training camp except in Miami. And it's like, yes, he will. He's Damian Lillard. Of course, we know what he's like. We've watched him for the last, like, 12 years. He seems like a good guy. Like, why are you trying to make it sound like he sucks?
Also, yeah, he's not going to quit basketball.
Right. Like,
it's clearly the only thing that it really moves. Not the only thing, he loves rapping, but... yeah, like he is a basketball player. We're not talking about a guy that just shows up to collect his paycheck. So obviously that was never going to happen. I don't know. The whole thing, like, it's like you said, it took so long that I think I got really pretty deep in the Hall of Mirrors, and because there's a level on which I'm like, actually, I think everybody played their role in this correctly. Like, it's embarrassing, it's dumb, it sucks that we as fans are, like, on this 24-hour news cycle with sports media where we pretend that all the posturing matters.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, they were posturing for a reason on right. all sides. That's how you get the best deal for yourself. And what happened? Like, Lillard landed on a team that very much looks like a championship contender, which is what he should have wanted the whole time. Miami gets to tell themselves that they're still the same team that went to the finals 2 out of the last 3 seasons, I think. And the Blazers got a good haul for a superstar player. So, like, outcomes-wise, I think everything worked. It just worked in, like, this really gross way. Like, this reality TV where everybody negotiates through the media thing. But that's just the reality that we're in. So I think if I was in Damian Lillard's shoes, I would also trade a little bit of my personal brand, make people think that I'm a clown. If it meant that I landed in a situation as good as Milwaukee, and if I was Damian Lillard, I would also want an agent that was willing to embarrass himself to accomplish that. So,
well, he certainly did that.
Maybe it worked. Not sure.
I mean, you know, whatever. All's well that ends well. And, you know, if you're Lillard, I don't see how you can be too upset. Yes, Milwaukee's cold, but like you're going to have a better chance to win a title than you've ever had this year. Playing Lillard and Giannis is just a dream combo. They've supposedly been wanting to do this together. They, you know, Giannis has had like a basketball crush on him for years. I love the outcome. I think it's really great. I think it's also really kind of funny and tragic from Milwaukee's standpoint, from a little bit from Milwaukee's standpoint that you know, you make this kind of potentially generational trade for a generational superstar, and you have to give up a guy who was so critical to your culture and to your you know, one championship in the last 50 years.
Yeah.
And then he immediately ends up getting rerouted to your biggest playoff rival and will certainly have very consequential moments against you and against Lillard, who he is known for shutting down in the postseason. Just fantastic all around.
Yeah. Shakespearean, and the depth of it is added to by the fact that I think Holiday's wife came out today or the day before and wrote a very long essay about like how difficult it is. Like, you know, don't feel sorry for the guy that makes $150 million or whatever, but at the same time, like, he's got his kids in school with the children of other players, a life that was really rooted there. So it is tough to be one of the best in the world at your field, you know, like one of the top 50 basketball players in the world, and you've been at it for decades. You dedicated your whole life to it, and you're kind of at the apex or the end of your career, maybe, and you still don't have any control over, you know, one day you wake up and they're like, pack your bags.
Right.
So he landed in a good spot, but it does, the whole thing is complicated.
Yeah, for sure. Speaking of wives, too, not to be too flippant about this, but it may be a little bit easier to understand why Damian Lillard might have preferred Miami over, say, Milwaukee, when you find out that today the reports emerged that he is getting a divorce from his longtime wife. So, you know, condolences that you will be needing to live your rebound life in Milwaukee instead of Miami, but you're still an NBA player. You'll be in Miami some. I think it'll work out okay.
Yeah. You know what I really think is the main motivation for Dame that he wanted to land in Miami?
Hmm.
I think it's the only place where he had a very real chance of winning a title while also being able to say that he was the best player on the team.
Hmm.
He doesn't get that in Milwaukee with Giannis. He's not getting it in Denver. He's not getting it in Golden State. Like, there are places where adding a Damian Lillard could have made them a championship contender, but none of them have two stars who are both like more defense and utility mm-hmm. than they are alpha scorer, like playmaker, give them the ball and get out of the way guys.
Totally. That's a very interesting point. Yeah. Oh, one other thing before I forget, while we're talking about Miami, I just wanted to point out the leaks of all the like City Edition jerseys have come out, the Nike City Edition jerseys in the last couple days. You know, as always, there's been some that are very fun and cool and some that are horrendous. The Heat released ones that are arguably the worst NBA jerseys of all time. I highly encourage everyone to seek them out. They just say Heat Culture on them, but the culture like is written in like big block, like impact block style letters, but there's like cracks in it, like it's like old like ancient Greek granite or something like that, and it is just absolutely the dumbest shit in the world. I forget exactly what the trim says, but along the trim there's writing that says like more virtuous, tries harder, more professional, you know, better than you or whatever.
Got that dog in him.
Like, where the fuck do these people get off? I understand that that's like real, you know, I understand that Spoelstra's, you know, put a great thing in, but like, Did the Showtime Lakers, they had all that mystique around Riley and everything, but were they trying to convince people that they're, like, good people or, like, working class or something like that? I just fucking hate that as a posture, especially when it's combined with how absolutely asinine and Lakers-esque their fan base has become.
Yeah, these guys do sit-ups. We're happy for them.
Congratulations. Congratulations on doing a job that you're getting paid for. You know, I don't know what to say. You know, I wanted to kind of run down the rest of the offseason moves. We discussed, obviously, the biggest stuff we kind of already covered was, you know, Bradley Beal going to Phoenix. And obviously the Bucks getting Lillard is huge. The Celtics getting Jrue Holiday is almost equally huge. Couple quick things that were very interesting to me. The Jazz picked up John Collins for basically nothing. I think that the Jazz will certainly be competing for a play-in spot, but that was that's just classic Danny Ainge being like, there's an asset, why not? I'll take it.
Yeah. I think that one actually is another example of like, just get salary on your books that is tradable or keepable, you know? Like I think they might low key be in the Joel Embiid sweepstakes.
Ooh.
Like if he were to in a year or two move on from Philly. That's the kind of, like, they have 15 draft picks or something like that stockpiled, and then they have, you know, a piece in Markkanen and in Collins that could fit with Embiid in a front court, and then they have Walker Kessler, and, you know, they just have assets, so I think it makes sense to trade into a little bit of salary, even if people don't think that Collins is worth $25 million a year, whatever he's getting. It's just better to have that than to have players that are not useful at all.
Totally. Oh, the other things that stuck out to me, just quickly, one, kind of laugh at the Rockets for backing up the Brinks truck for Fred VanVleet and Dylan Brooks. Rumors are now starting to kind of percolate out that the Rockets had a wink-wink agreement to give James Harden a max. That stands to reason. There were links all the way back to like last Christmas that Harden was interested in a reunion with the Rockets. It explains a lot about why things went down the way they did with the Sixers, that Harden was counting on a max offer from elsewhere, and so were the Sixers, so that they would just kind of be able to wash their hands of him. And now that that isn't possible, Harden has opted back in, but he's mad. The whole thing seems very strange, and it seems clear to me that what's now being reported is true, which is that he basically had a deal all lined up with Houston, and then he talked to Ime Udoka, Houston's new coach, and was like, oh yeah, I can't wait, I'm gonna what I got my sights set on this year is winning the scoring title. And Ime Udoka's like, yeah, we're not gonna sign that guy. And then they didn't, and this entire huge fucking cold war between him and Daryl Morey is now going on, where he's calling him out by name in front of like an audience of mystified Chinese business people.
Yeah, I don't know the economics of running a NBA team in Houston, but it doesn't really make sense to me. I kind of have to side with creepy old Ime on this one. Like, I don't see why you need James Harden to be pounding the air out of the ball and taking step back threes when you've got all of these young players that need to develop. And that's not to like hammer on the idea that Harden is so selfish, because obviously he's an incredible playmaker and passer. He's a player that needs to be with other like veterans and win games. There's no point to him if he's on a team that has a purpose of drafting high and developing players.
Mm-hmm. And it's easy to make fun of Dylan Brooks, you know, because he's so annoying and gross and like dresses like Michael the Animal Steel or whatever, but like with a cowboy hat, you know, very, very theater school energy. Obviously, I hate that. But I mean, he's pretty much an automatic all defensive caliber player. You know, he has horrible shot selection, but I don't know, maybe that will change. God knows why you would assume it would. But you know, interesting kind of lateral move as far as I'm concerned. Paying $40 million a year for Fred VanVleet is curious to me, but whatever. Nothing to do with me. Dallas is the last kind of really interesting team in the West, in my opinion. They added Grant Williams in a sign-and-trade from Boston and re-signed Kyrie Irving. This is a very talented team, but very combustible. Obviously, the downside is pronounced when it comes to Luka kind of becoming pouty and or Kyrie Irving requesting a trade to the Clippers in 3 weeks. You know, you just never know.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I saw a quote from Kyrie saying that Dallas was like always on the top of his list. That was his number one place to play to re-sign this offseason, which, you know, that's never a good sign when Kyrie Irving says that he wants to play for you, because that means that he actually doesn't.
Yeah, it's like that meme of the Grim Reaper, like, knocking on different doors with, like, trails of blood coming out of them. If it's a super team and Kyrie Irving's on it, you better fucking watch your back.
I don't know. I kind of think they're going to be mediocre, even if everybody plays. Like, I don't think that's that good of a fit with the two of them. Like, not enough defense. The other players are... Like, I think that Grant Williams is a fun player to root for, but I just don't see that kind of thing making a huge difference between the way that they were last season and the way that they will be this upcoming season.
I mean, they have the potential to be, like, all-league annoying, too. The combination of Kyrie Irving, Grant Williams, and Luka Doncic could be, like, generational in terms of bothering me.
And annoying to other people and also annoying to each other. Like, I don't...
Hopefully.
I don't think there's a lot of patience or maturity in that group yet.
Yeah, yeah. We'll see. My thing with Dallas is I just kind of view them potentially as underrated because I am imagining people will be reacting to the potential for that catastrophic downside. I think that they have enough talent that they'll be a decent regular season team, but I do think that in some way the wheels will come off. In any case, we'll see. We're running super long, so I think I want to kind of start to wrap it up. Last couple things, last sort of item to touch on in the offseason. The baby boy, Tyrese Halliburton, got that money. It was like a $260 or so million max extension from the Pacers. He got a slam cover. We love Tyrese. Congrats to Reese's Passes. He's doing big things out there in the Eastern Conference, fortunately for us. Last thing I want to talk about before we move on for the night. Like I said, Kings had media day on Monday. There were many fun things that happened. Of course, it's like a silly little pep rally for the fans, basically. The most consequential thing to come out of that, I don't know if you saw this, Duncan, but there was like a little promo video that they were shooting as Kings players were kind of cycling through taking their photos or whatever. And some team staffer was holding up a phone and asking them, what kind of sound do you think the beam would make? And, you know, there were various, like, somewhat funny, but mostly pretty similar answers. And Keegan Murray, of course, was one of one, because he goes, and then gives, like, a really sweet little smile, like he can't barely, like, he can barely contain how funny he thinks what he just did is. And it is it's impossible for me to explain. I'll drop in a little quote of it right here. But somebody like lined it up with the beam actually lighting. And it's just it's just one of the greatest things I've ever seen. It's so, so, so funny. Oh, and before we go, the last thing I want to discuss. Oh, my God. So we're recording today here. It's Thursday the 5th. Yesterday, Bing, Microsoft Bing, Steve Ballmer's own for some reason emerged as a relevant website by like creating a free version of the DALL-E AI image generator thing. And there were apparently, when it first started, no filters on it. So there were a lot of variations of people doing 9/11 circulating on Twitter. There was a LeBron doing 9/11. There were like the characters from Neon Genesis Evangelion doing 9/11. Lots of 9/11 content. People love 9/11 jokes at this point. We have officially determined that too soon is over. There's a lot of people who were not born when 9/11 happened out there making 9/11 jokes. Not my idea. It happened. Okay. Anyway, all of that is to illustrate that these NBA memes that were coming out yesterday were so fucking out of pocket. It was unbelievable. And I went insane with Kings. I just, if you want to follow me on Twitter at Purple Black Pill and find my thread of images that I made like a Dragon Ball Z, De'Aaron Fox one. I made like a Sonic the Hedgehog style Fox and Ox thing. But the very first thing I made, the reason I wanted to share this is that the very first thing I made, it was just like a bolt of inspiration. The second I found out that I could make kind of any image I want on this AI image generator, my brain instantly went to, I want to see an image in the style of The Simpsons of Kobe Bryant getting arrested. And so I made that, and I'm going to make that the episode art for this episode. Because it's important to me that people talk about Kobe Bryant in that way more than they do.
Because he did rape?
Because of the rape that he did, yeah, in Colorado.
That makes sense.
Yeah, thank you. Anyway, that's just about it for us. We're going to leave it on that note. Coming up for the Kings, hey, check this out. Games and times. Preseason, first three games, Sunday the 8th versus Toronto. That is coming right up. Wednesday the 11th versus the Lakers, Sunday the 15th versus the Warriors, guys, Kings basketball is here. I'm about to be living in Sacramento. Shit is getting so real. We're so excited to be back. We'll be here once a week now, you know, throughout the season. Obviously, I'm moving. Things make it crazy. Keep your eyes on the feeds of various kinds. Email us at purpleandblackpill@gmail.com. That's purpleandblackpill@gmail.com. Twitter is at purpleblackpill. Instagram's at purpleblackpill. Hit us up. We'll see you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.
From the streets of Sacramento to the freeways of L.A. We've got to keep this fire burning and accept a little gray. So this long line of cars is trying to break free. And this long because of